Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined, I'm hoping, by Ramita. We're having a small technical detail happen, and I'm hoping that Ramita is on the line. Ramita, are you there?
I'm here, Jen.
Oh, it worked. Oh, that's fabulous. So we didn't get you the right information to call in, but we took a chance and we thought maybe it was you, and there you are.
I figured I'd do what I knew how to do and see if it worked from the start.
See if it worked. That was well done. Thank you for that. So, Ramita is joining us this evening because we have kind of a unique practice opportunity coming up in August, and we wanted to highlight that for folks. We are having a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat in North Carolina, and as people who are familiar with practice know, it's not at all unusual to have a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, but quite unusual to have it not at the monastery. So it's kind of a special event, and we wanted to highlight it this evening. So thanks for being with us, Ramita.
My pleasure.
So I thought we might start by just looking at the There Is Nothing Wrong With You work for people who might not be familiar with it. And since you're a veteran of practice and have certainly done that retreat, I thought maybe you could just speak to your experience of that a little bit to start us off.
Sure. I've done it twice. Before in two different formats, and there's nothing wrong with you retreat. It touches on what seems to me some of the deepest, most insidious conditioning that a human being can have, the fact that there's the belief that there's something wrong with me, and that it's reinforced so many places in our society that it's almost invisible. It's so much a part of, of who I think I am. And this retreat just, in such a gentle, loving, supportive way, helped me see what I'd never seen before about myself.
Yeah, that's really well put, that it's really invisible to us. It's kind of the water we swim in before something kind of makes it come out into relief for us.
Yeah, I had an example when I did the retreat at the monastery. At that time, I was, when I'd go on retreat, I'd put an extra meditation session in during the lunch break, and maybe one before I go to bed. And if there was an extra time in there somewhere, I'd be sitting, and I was giving myself a lot of pats on the back. This is good practice. And during this retreat, I realized that there was a belief that I needed to meditate more because there was something wrong with me.
Wow.
I needed that.
Wow.
And it just blew me away that this belief had infiltrated my practice in a way that I'd never suspected.
Wow. And wow, that's amazing. So there you are, meditating, and not realizing that there's self-hate coming in there and taking that over and turning it into, well, this is self-improvement. You need to do this because there's something wrong with you.
Exactly. The same behavior, it looks fine. There's a person sitting. There's a person meditating. But the motive, what was going on inside me, was such a place that came from suffering, came from self-hate, and it had been completely outside of awareness.
And this is an aside, but what I project happens in that process, as the self-hate is freed up from the equation, is you actually get to meditate.
Yes,
so it's not
yes.
as if like, oh, okay, well then I'm not going to meditate because it's coming from the wrong place. Instead, it's you, the human, the being, actually gets to sit down and receive the benefits of meditation instead of it being a conditioned process that's given over to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate.
Exactly. And then the meditation, the sitting, came from a place of joy and enthusiasm and an expression of who I really am, and a whole different experience. And such a relief, the tension that left my body as a result of these insights was just amazing.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember the adjectives you used in the beginning, but that is my experience, that it's an environment that is incredibly gentle, but also
mm-hmm.
unwavering. To put
mm-hmm.
up in front of us a mirror, the image I often get of it is that kind of we all come together and each of us, boy, it sure seems like it to me that every human being on the planet has their own version of whatever self-hate is going on. We come into this room and we all pick it up outside of ourselves and put it in the center of the room where we can actually look at it and get a sense of, wow, I mean, what's so powerful is, first of all, seeing, oh my gosh, everyone else has this too. You know, this isn't just going on for me. And then in seeing that, we get to see the goodness in all the other folks in the room. And then, of course, eventually we get to bring that back and go, maybe it's true of this person too.
Yes. Yes, it's like a great big disidentification.
Yes.
We all put it out there. We all see it's not who we are. And none of us are taking it personally. So we can look at it from a perspective that, you know, this is a process, it's universal, and once we see how it works, we're free of it.
Yeah, and that's really good too, because once we see how it works, that's a huge piece of what happens in the There Is Nothing Wrong With You work, is it's very particular, the process that happens during the retreat of dismantling, you know, learning the tools to see the conditioning, to dismantle it, to go beyond it, and to live, you know, to put ourselves on a path of living beyond it, living without self-hatred. When, as Sherry often talks about, you know, practice really begins when our relationship with self-hatred ends.
Yes. And way back when I did the TINW work, we didn't have recording and listening in the same way. So I am so thrilled to add, to see what it's like now having this very poignant tool, this potent tool to work with in the context of There's Nothing Wrong With Me.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm getting ready to excavate a whole new level.
Oh, it's really true and really exciting. And I hope people will really take that in, that it's quite common that folks who have been in practice for a long time and haven't done the retreat in a while will circle back and come and do this retreat, because another thing that I so appreciate about the retreat is that it mirrors exactly for the person kind of what they need to see at any given time in their practice. So, you know, if you're just brand new to practice, boy, it's a powerful experience. And, you know, if you've been in practice a really, really long time, as you're saying, then you get to see all of that mirrored from that really deep level of practice and so on. And in my experience, having folks from all different levels of practice in the room in a particular retreat is so helpful. So.
Yes, I can imagine now, having reached this depth in my practice, to be with people who are at different levels, I will, again, that disidentification as a group, to be able to step back and to see how people step back, no matter what the content is, no matter what the experience of practice is, the same process applies and it works. All you have to do is let the process work. Let the guide lead us, and amazing things happen.
Yeah. So just before we end, the last piece of it was the piece about how unusual it is to be able to offer it in a far-flung location, and actually in your neck of the woods. And I know you've been to that particular retreat center, so you can speak to the incredible beauty of it. You know,
It's lovely. The accommodations are really comfortable. The food is fantastic. The natural environment, there's a lovely lake. I get to visit the white peacock who lives on the property. And it's just a really, really lovely place. And to have this this monastery-sponsored retreat within driving distance is just amazing. I did it one year. There was a weekend format, and it was powerful. But to be able to really immerse myself in the 24 hours a day for 7 or 8 days.
Yeah.
It's very, very precious.
Yeah, it really is. And so what we're hoping is that folks who are in the Southeast, or, you know, even really anywhere along the Eastern Seaboard, might look to see if there's anyone in your life who you've just kind of felt for a while might benefit from the There Is Nothing Wrong With You work, and that this is really an opportunity for people to refer other folks. Because, you know, I mean, if you don't have the big fire in your own belly and really, really, really drawn to the work, it's, you know, it's a lot to make the trip all the way across the country to get a plane ticket and all that's necessary to get here. But, you know, if it's an hour or two or even 5 hours from your house and you can hop in your car and do it, you might be more likely to try it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can't wait.
Yeah, me too. Really, really excited. So anything else, Ramita, that you'd like to add in before we turn it over to Michael and Sherry?
No, I'm just very grateful that the Sangha is coming together to do this for us in the Southeast, and I really urge everyone who's considering it to take advantage of this very rare opportunity.
Yeah, and you know, last thing that makes me think of is just, it also says a lot about the Sangha in the Southeast, that, you know, the fact that we're able to do this, and we're all, you know, over in California, so we rely very heavily on you guys to help us pull it off. So it really speaks to the dedication and the depth of practice that happens amongst the Sangha in that area that we're able to do this. So many, many deep thanks to you and to all the folks over there.
Likewise, Jen. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks for being with us, Ramita. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ramita. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Long time no talk.
I know. Lazy
yes.
Streets will interfere with a girl's life.
Yes.
Oh, no, that's not the attitude, is it? No, that's not how that actually goes. You know, it's a rough old thing when you have so many marvelous practice opportunities to choose from that you have to really weigh this one against it. So I'm really glad to be back, and I want to thank my fellow monks for sitting in, making it happen while I was off doing other things.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, another team effort.
A team effort. And that's what Ramita and Jen were just talking about. You know, the kind of team effort it takes to take a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat to North Carolina, or later, you know, an Eightfold Path in Pennsylvania. And it's good. It takes all of us.
Yes. And you know what was coming up as you said that is a team without ego is really a joy. To be a part
of. It's a powerful team. It's a powerful team, yes.
Yeah. Wow. So that's great, and I have some announcements.
Oh, all right.
The new quarter for Reflective Listening Buddies has opened for registration.
Aha.
Yes. Connect with Sangha to be supported in your practice during one-on-one phone sessions. And
when does it start, Michael? Registration is open. Never mind. I didn't ask that. People can go to the website, right? And they'll have the information will be there.
Yes. It has opened for registration. So it should be open.
Sign up now. Yeah. Okay, good.
And coming up in late July, you can tailor the Your Practice retreat to support you in what you choose to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And that is July 23rd through 30th.
Before that, if you happen to be in the Northwest, you can come and join us in Seattle for a one-day workshop at East West Books.
Great. Mm-hmm. And I will look up the date while you're talking to the first
caller. I think it's
there.
July 20th. It's July 20th.
July 20th. Okay.
I'm almost certain. Yeah.
So with your practice retreat, you can take on any theme that you choose to practice with for that week.
Mm-hmm.
As Ramita and Jen were just talking about, There Is Nothing Wrong With You will be on the East Coast August 8th through 15th.
Yeah, that really is a special place. I'm hoping that as time goes on, we can kind of get back to our rhythm with North Carolina and maybe eventually move to, of course, this year we have two retreats in the same location that whether it's There's Nothing Wrong With You or just two regular Zen-themed or unthemed retreats and get back to that. For so many years, we were there twice a year, and then we kind of lost our momentum, so it's time to get back to it.
Great. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all our events. Our call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406. And then you'd enter your PIN followed by pound. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So here we go, Sherry.
Here we go.
First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. This is Jim in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hey, Jim.
How are you guys?
Good, and you?
Good. It's funny you guys were talking about North Carolina. That's great. I'm so glad I called in because I've been running into some dead ends looking for a place for Justin to do the one-day workshop, and I didn't think about doing it at maybe some, like, local bookstores that might kind of specialize in that. So that would be a path to run down. So that's good.
Yeah, I guess you guys have probably explored Unitarian churches and Quaker meeting houses and things like that. For a long time they were really available, but I think everybody's caught on that those are great locations. So.
Well, I'm looking at for a long time. Been trying to implement successfully sort of a schedule practice, and I was wondering maybe if you could, when I was actually at the monastery, I read somewhere where it said, I think it was in a piece you had written, it said, you know, and kind of a parenthetical statement, anybody who wants to, and suffering needs to keep a calendar, and thought, that's interesting. And then there was a tweet that just went out recently that said, schedule practice is a great way to concentrate on the process instead of the content. And I was wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I'll certainly talk about what arises now. I have no idea then. But for me, when I want to see how something is happening, I like to put a focus there that is going to reveal the process, the underlying process. So, for instance, if I were to decide that I'm going to sit every morning at 7:30, And I really want to do that. It's not a should. It's not anything else. It's just I really want to do that. Or I want to do yoga for 10 minutes and sit for 10 minutes every morning. Whatever it is that I want to practice with, I set that up in such a way. And I am a big, you know, I like calendars and schedules and keeping track of things. And I don't like leaving anything to chance because chance. Usually is not life, it's conditioned mind, and there's nothing really chance about it. So as we've noticed, conditioned mind keeps a very strict schedule. Okay? It's in control all the time that it can be. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, whatever it is that I'm going to do at that particular time, I'm going to do that every day. I'm going to make gusho to the front door every time I leave, or I'm going to say thank you every time I start my car, whatever it is. And what I get to see in making that kind of schedule and that kind of commitment is everything that is done to keep me from making those kinds of choices for myself.
Okay. I see, it's kind of like if when there's a line in the sand, you know, I'm going to sit at 7:30, then you know when you've crossed it. But if you just leave it up to quote-unquote chance or conditioned mind, then it can maybe fool you into thinking that you're rationalizing for one choice or the other, but that's where it can step in and join the conversation and really, make a case to not sit at 7:30 or whatever.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And as you've no doubt noticed, its strategy is to thwart the effort for long enough that it can say, you're not doing it anyway. Why don't you just quit? Why don't you just give this up? You're clearly not going to do it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I actually like to I always keep an actual printout off of our website from the I don't want to, I don't feel like it book,
mm-hmm.
and it's you know, just a regular old fashioned 30-day calendar on an 8.5 by 11 sheet, and I keep track of my life on that thing. So I know what I've decided I'm going to do for my practice. And I keep track on that calendar of whether or not I'm doing it. So it's not like I start out on the first of the month and then by the third or the fourth I've forgotten that that was what I decided to do. And, of course, recording and listening is really good about this too. It's a great tool to use for this. But I like that visual. You know, this is what I'm going to do. I didn't do it. How did I not do it? Well, I overslept, or I had an early meeting, or I needed to make a phone call at that time. Okay, so you know, this doesn't seem accidental, right? And each time I get tricked into not doing whatever it is that I'm going to do, it's right there on my calendar for the next day. Now, if I can drop the self-hate about this, stop the beatings, then the next day it's going to come up on my calendar and I get to recommit to doing it.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I think one of the things that really hit home is conditioning will beat you up enough to basically to say, well, you could just, you know, you should just give up on trying to do this, which...
Yes, that is... Go ahead. Oh, I thought you finished. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, without it, it has to rely on self-hate to win that.
That's exactly right.
That ingredient there is, oh, man, you know, that kind of, I'm terrible. But without that, then there's no need to stop trying.
That's right. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And that is such a critical understanding. Because what's happening to most people until they've done a fair amount of practice is they're being trained not to do anything conditioning doesn't want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear people say, you know, I don't want to take that on because I know that I'm going to fail and I don't want the beatings. Well, that really misses the whole point, right? So what we want to do is stop the beatings because then, as you say, there's no reason not to start again every day.
Right.
Once we have that attitude, then it's not going to be long until we're successful at anything we want to do. And that's really kind of a big bottom line of practice is seeing how we're being controlled so we can end that. It's actually not about doing any of the things that we might commit to do. Yeah, so Ramita said earlier on Good News, that she realized she was sitting because there was a belief that she needed to sit because there was something wrong with her. Okay, so once conditioning gets us into that kind of groove, it's really got us, right? So we want to end those processes so that we're free to just practice with any and everything we want to practice with because being present in the moment in the spirit of inquiry is how we want to live.
Got it. Well, can I just take one more minute make a commitment just make a public commitment, I guess, and that would be just to, in the spirit of what we've been talking about, I do a recording where I check in with a mentor about what the next day is going to be at night, and that's usually like around, so let's just say 10 o'clock. And then, and then in the morning, first thing when I get up, it, the very first thing, I don't know why I have so much resistance to like taking a shower first thing in the morning. I have a resistance to taking a shower anyway. This content, neither here nor there. But first shower first thing in the morning, and then a 20-minute sit, and I will, I'll report. I can report back, but I just wanted to make that commitment.
Yes, good. And the focus of that commitment is to see everything that conditioning attempts to do to thwart you, how it uses beatings, humiliation, threats, badgering, all of its little tools to try to get you to stop. And you just watch for it. You watch everything that happens. You watch for what it does. And you say, and this is what I'm doing. And I mean, the power in that is outrageous.
Well, I have been able to see that it it just kind of throws a tantrum about going to bed, and I was watching TV practicing unconsciousness the other day, and there was this lady, this family that was having a sleepover of like 4-year-olds, and they'd watched some movie, and it was way past their bedtime, which is like 10, and they were just having these meltdowns, and it was like, we want to watch another movie, and they were so tired, but the way that they were expressing that tiredness was just these tantrums about going to bed, and I was so, they were in a process of just being tired and being dissatisfied, and so that was not expressing themselves in a process of, like, you know, being content and wanting to go to bed, and I was just like, oh, man, like, you know, if conditioning can get me to stay up late, then it can throw off all my other commitments. And so I was able to see how it worked by having that kind of line in the sand and stuff.
Yeah.
But I've
and
my time, but go ahead.
Well, with that, though, it's perfect because we can all see ourselves in those kids, right? I mean, that's what it does.
Yeah.
Talks us into staying up too late, and then we have to drink coffee the next day, and then we're groggy, and so we're eating donuts with our coffee, and then pretty soon we're cranky and not enjoying life, and then getting blamed for the fact that it's not working. Because look at what you did.
So, yeah, and it was so ironic to see that when they were tired, they actually almost had this like pseudo energy to combat going to sleep and throw these tantrums in there. Because I thought, well, that's a perfect content of a process. They're in a process of being tired, which is dissatisfied and not feeling right. And so then everything's a problem, and the fact they can't stay up is a problem. And it was neat to see. But
Educational television.
Yeah. Well, I'll call in and let you know how I do with my commitment.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
You see, when we're paying attention, everything enlightens us, right? Sitting there practicing unconsciousness, he wasn't supposed to hear that and make that connection, right?
Yes.
But he did. So there we are.
Yes, there we all are.
Mm-hmm. And it's not what, it's how, right? We can
we
can be enlightened anywhere by anything if we're paying attention.
Wonderful. What a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And here's another blessing. We have another caller.
Very good. Thanks, Michael.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Linda from Alabama.
Oh, hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Tell me about it.
Let's see. Always takes me by surprise what to talk about. I guess what I've been looking at is that I'm doing a lot of different practice, a lot of practicing, and it really is helping me see a lot of things. So I just want to
good.
So, like, I was doing the email class and the 30-day retreat and stop, drop, and text and meditating and all that all at the same time. And it's like, Even amongst all the content, if you remember, I've been going through a lot of content lately. And so, I don't know, I'm seeing things, and it's kind of cool. And
it's very cool. It's very cool. Yeah. I just want to underline that. I just want to underline that before you go past it, because it's, I'm sure that there's an expression for this, and it's escaping me right now. But what you get back as a result of the effort that you put in is far, far greater than the effort. Right? Yeah, so you're practicing, a person is practicing 10 minutes out of the day. You know, that's okay. I mean, it's better than not, right? But a person gets up to an hour a day that they're spending on practice, and as you indicate, it's spread out throughout the day, and the change in your life is way more than an hour's worth of practice should be able to deliver, right?
I agree, yes.
Yeah, good.
So I think I've been looking a lot at, you know, I never know whether to say bodily sensation or depression, but I was going to come out and say depression. And there's two things that have come up that have been helpful lately. One is an old archive that I heard where it was like, because I have a lot of fatigue, and it was like, if you compare when you feel good to when you feel bad, then when you feel bad, it feels worse. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that has helped me a lot. It's like, okay, can I do the thing I need to do instead of, oh, I don't feel good?
Exactly.
And the answer usually is
yes. Yeah, and so probably I also talked there, if it was me talking, about when I learned that I needed to say I'm high energy and low energy.
Right.
You know, none of manic depressive is not, that's not helpful. So I don't have a lot of energy right now. And as you say, can I do this thing that I need to? Oh, yeah, I can do that. Okay,
yeah.
Then why are we having a conversation about how I feel?
There you go. I love it. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
Mm-hmm.
That's been amazing. And then the other thing that, and this is kind of funny to me, that I have been doing this for a while, but it's been like I've been telling myself for a while, every time I get tired, I get depressed. And why is that? Why do I always get depressed every time I get tired? And it finally dawned on me, because I can't really, you know, you can't really fix being tired in a way. It's like you've worn yourself out and you're tired. But it's very possible that it's, I'm depressed and I'm fatigued because I'm depressed. And I can fix that, so to speak. I can do more practice. I can, you know, do my attitudes, whatever. And I can, and it's like in case he's been tricking me by saying it the opposite way.
Aha. Uh-huh. Oh, it is a sneaky setup, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm sure you, you know, you have the same experience, but it was revolutionary for me when I realized that that no matter how tired I was, and my fingers are making little quote marks in the sky, no matter how tired I was, if I got up and went for a walk, I had energy.
That's good. Yeah, that's probably true. I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah.
Because it's not that I'm actually physically tired. I'm tired mentally from what conditioning is doing to me.
What it's telling me. Oh my God, it's so terrible. You're going to have to do this, and you won't have time to do that. And oh, it's so horrible.
Oh, yeah.
I might as well just lay down, because I'm not going to get anything done anyway.
Right. And the real clue for me always was, I mean, but there are times, and you know, everybody gets tired. You lie down, you fall asleep. But when you lie down and suddenly you have energy, you know you're getting set up.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, yeah, it's just that it's siphoning it off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow, well, that's a lot to see, isn't
it? It's been a good week.
It's been a good week.
Or a few days. I'm not even sure when all that came.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah, well, we're very lucky. We're very fortunate to have an awareness practice that allows us these insights.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that we're present enough to receive them.
Right. That's true. Yes. And I think doing all the practice makes you more present.
Oh, yes. God. You know,
and hang on to them. The recording listening helps hang on to them. So I did finish my first 30-day retreat that I've actually finished all the way, from Making a Change for Good. And
good
I have,
for you. Congratulations.
I have two more days, but I assume that I'll finish those last 2 days. And so I'm going to do my next one on recording and listening.
Oh, very good. Yeah. So I just, you know, a rant. I don't think the newsletter has come out yet, but on, you know, it, you kind of have to put in the amount of time that you want to be free into
right.
being free, right? We can't devote ourselves to being in bondage and hope that by some miracle our few minutes of practice every day is going to give us the freedom that we're looking for. And
right.
what you just reminded me of with that, that I wish I did, but is that spreading it out during the day is also a really powerful tool. That
right.
if we try to do everything in the morning, then it's very easy for conditioning to just put us asleep for the rest of the day. But if we stop every hour and do anything, as you say, you know, that's why we send out the tweets and all of those, you know, get a reflective listening buddy and you have to stop at a certain time and be on the phone for 15 minutes paying attention. And spread those things out through the week and through the day.
Right.
And the effect is really exponential.
So, yeah, I think stop, drop, and text does that too because you
yes.
make the call
for yes.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take a lot of them. You know, it's not like we have to spend hours out of every day, although if we can, it's really nice. You know, if
yeah,
we're driving
yeah.
or we're going for a walk or whatever it is, and we really do have hours in the day, that's fabulous. But it's just the stopping and coming back to the present on a regular basis that begins to train us to be here. My teacher used to say, the mind will accept whatever is real to it. And so if we start training ourselves to be present, it can be as simple as checking in with where your feet are. But if we with where your feet are.
Oh,
you know,
right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a kind of a silly focus, but, you know, what shoes do I have on? Where are my feet? You know, where am I walking? What does that feel like? And very, very quickly, the mind will just seemingly on its own start checking that out. And there we are. And then we pick another little practice that we do. You know, every time I take a drink of water, I whatever. And those things begin to add up. And the gaps in between where we're able to be talked into going to sleep get shorter and shorter and shorter.
Right. Yeah, cool. So gacho to everybody.
Oh, well, congratulations. That is such a huge, huge accomplishment. And I happen to know it's kind of a difficult time in life.
Yeah.
And so to take advantage of that, if you can use that expression in that situation,
right.
to really deepen your practice at a time when what conditioning wants us to do is give up our practice and give up on ourselves. So,
right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
great job.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Linda.
Right.
Good night.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Linda. Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
The practice theme for this year is upping your game. We are all spiritual athletes in the game of life, and we can train to participate joyfully in the spirit of play. Yes, we are up against a worthy opponent, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. But we can up our chances of success by getting a personal trainer, a Zen awareness coach. The awareness coaches are guided by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching around any number of life issues or awareness practice in general. Coaching places a special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and from old timers that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. Since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to practice, getting a coach assists us to support ourselves while supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, visit sanghamarket.com, go to the services section, click on the little monk, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
All right, thanks.
Sure. next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Ellie in San Diego.
Well, how are you, Ellie?
I'm good. A little frog in my throat, but good.
Oh, good. I mean, you're good, not that you have a frog in your throat. You knew that, though, didn't you? Okay.
I did.
All right, good.
I've been getting so much out of practice, and the Reflective Listening Buddy program and the email class still is changing my life, and it's wonderful. So thank you so much.
Mm. Well, as we were talking about earlier, it's a big team effort. So I'll say you're welcome for the entire team. How about that?
Indeed.
Yeah. I know that we have other topics to cover, but we're in the process now of getting ready for a retreat. And the number of people who contribute to that is just really astounding. And most all of that work goes on behind the scenes. No, I'm the figurehead. So people are used to seeing me around doing things, but I do really very little compared to all of the massive amounts of work that people are doing all the time to make this practice happen. So on behalf of them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So what's going on?
So I just went through a really stressful period, and coming out of that, where some of the practice supports that I put into place slipped, and I'm actually really proud of myself because I'm not beating myself up over that and just moving on. And
can I correct your language, please? Because it's really important.
Of course.
And it's actually better than you stated. You're not allowing yourself to be beaten over that, right? So you're standing up against those voices and not allowing them to beat her, which is huge.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
And in kind of coming back to the supports and the things that I've found work for me, what my body wants and what mentor is saying is, keep it simple and come back to what you know works. And I can just hear conditioning like, oh no, but you could do it better, you could do it this way. And I've really seen how, for me, that's a pattern that leads to it getting complicated so that I'll give up.
Yep, exactly so. And it when it's saying those things, it sounds like it really is on your side, doesn't it? It's really rooting for you to do more and be more successful. Yeah.
And some of them are really neat ideas that might be great
fabulous.
At some time in the future.
Yeah, fabulous idea. The world is full of fabulous ideas, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
And right now, I need to keep it simple and do the things that I know work for me. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's really intelligent.
Thanks. One of the things that I've been really looking at is the creating structure, and I'm definitely one of those people that conditioning had convinced me that I could not make plans for myself, basically. Mm. And I'm starting to see through that, and I really benefited from the structure of the email class. But when it comes to setting structure up for myself, I'm still stymied. I've seen that part of it is this kind of complication thing. But I was wondering if you could maybe give me some tips on like baby steps of moving towards more strength.
Okay, let me ask you first. What is it that you're trying to accomplish with this?
Well, I found the structure in the email class really helpful in, like, seeing where conditioning was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing more of where conditioning comes in.
Okay. Now, you said you know what works for you.
I definitely, yeah, I have some things.
And you know that keeping things simple and not letting conditioning complicate them really works for you.
Yes.
Okay. And so what kind of structure would be helpful for you in being able to be sure that those things happen?
Up until I get home from work, I'm great.
Okay.
After that, and on the weekends, there's a tendency to zone out and let conditioning take over.
Okay. All right. Now, are you a physical person?
My work is not.
Uh-huh.
But I enjoy physical activity, yeah.
Okay. Do you tend to do that after work or on weekends?
Usually, I kind of fit it in when I can, but mostly after work on the weekends, yeah.
Okay. Okay. But you do tend to do it after work or on the weekends? You do try to do physical things? Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Okay, so now you probably heard a bunch of us talking about our obsession with steps, with walking and that sort of thing. I don't know if there's any to be made by the app Pacer, but if so, we should all invest because, I started out, I did that thing, 10,000 steps. Keeps you healthy, and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do 10,000 steps. Well, that didn't last very long at all. Yeah, because then it's 11, and then it's 12, and then it's 13, and then it's 15, and it's 20. And now that we're doing the thing to the run up to the, I don't know, has this been announced? I don't know. I'm out of touch. With the bridge walk, we're doing this for 120 days. Well, you were at the email class, so you know all this.
Yes.
And I find that no matter what is going on in my life, I am committed to getting those steps in. And I don't know if that kind of thing appeals to you, but if it does, boy, can that be a helpful structure. Because it's not a, if I were going to exercise, then it would be I'm too busy today, or I'm, traveling, or it's not going to, I can't fit it in, or I'm tired, or whatever is going on. But I will get those steps in every day if I have to be out walking at midnight. So, do you think you're a person who would respond to something like that? Are you thinking, or did everybody go away?
I'm thinking.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
it's one of those, there's a lot there, because my response to that, I have a history of allowing conditioning to beat me into following that kind of structure.
Yes, but you're not getting that, right? You're not allowing conditioning to beat you into anything, right? So this would be something that you would do for you. Now, I personally like the extra added attraction of I'm doing it to benefit kids in Cantalumba. So I like that aspect of it because it's not only for me, although I do tend to I just like things like that. You know, if I make an agreement to do something, I really like doing it because I like the stars on my calendar or the check mark for my whatever it is, you know. But I don't know if you're that kind of personality.
So it really is a kind of find whatever it is that works for me.
Yes, that's exactly right. That you want to do, that you look forward to doing. So again, with the walking thing, I really like it because it's a great opportunity to record and listen. And I enjoy that. Now, I might do other things too, but they don't lend themselves as much to recording and listening as walking does. But it has to be something that when you get home from work, you know, this is what you're going to do kind of first. You're going to change your clothes and get a snack if you need it, and then you're going to go do this thing, right?
Yeah.
And you look forward to it. And on the weekends, of course, you can do it more because you have more time. And so it helps us, in my experience anyway, it helps us get over that hump of resistance karmic conditioning uses to control us. Let's face it.
Yeah. It makes me, so what's coming to mind is the term joyful experimentation was in the class, and that's been coming up for me a lot of kind of exploring different options and approaching things with an air of curiosity, and I think I've been on the right track with that, so.
Good. You know, it reminds me of another thing, too. This actually I learned in years ago doing the Time Out for Parents book. One technique, if you fall into the trap of what happens to you when you come home from work, don't come home from work. Right? So until you've done what you wanted to do. So you just take your change of clothes if it's that. Or you make sure you have a snack or whatever you need so that you take care of you, and then you go home, because then when you go home, you're ready just to have quiet and your shower, whatever it is that you have for the rest of your evening. But you've already done the thing that you want to do for you. Just another little thing to explore. You know, because conditioning, as you know, wants to back us into a corner and give us two options, neither one of which work for us. And so it really is that joyful experimentation where you ask her maybe in the morning on the way to work or at lunch or whatever, you know, what would you like to do this evening?
That's a good idea.
Then you make a plan and you do it. Awesome. Let me know, huh?
I will. Thank you. For
I'm always looking for tips.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ellie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And I love the steps, Sherry. Love the steps.
You've got one of the little machines?
Hey, I got too many little devices. But yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's addictive, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It at least to me it's addictive. I really love it. I love everything about it. That it's you know, it's active and it's outdoors and it's for a bigger purpose than just me, but it feels great and it's taking care of the body, and there's just no downside to it that I can figure out.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the technology tools we have today to track it and count it and graph it and
yes. Exactly. Yeah, get our little stars and checks or whatever we like to do. And yeah, it's good.
Great. And let's talk to another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Beth.
Oh, hello, Beth. How are you?
Okay. Hanging from a rope.
What?
hanging from a rope and not seeing any strawberries. in one moment, and in the next moment, it's every morning waking up and starting over again.
Yes, yes, yeah. Every moment is waking up, starting over again, we hope. And then certainly we get a new shot at it every morning.
If you don't mind, as per the last caller, I am not that personality. That would not work for me.
What would work for you?
Work. Give me a farmhand. You know,
Beth, you're kind of strobing a little bit. Could you say that again?
Okay. I like to get some down. I'd rather work than go to the gym.
Me too.
My last conversation with you at the monastery, so many years ago, we ran out of time, and you promised sometime in the future we would talk about stuff in torpor.
Talk about what?
Sloth and torpor.
Oh, sloth and torpor. Oh, sloth and torpor, my two favorite. Yeah, they should be a law firm, shouldn't they? Sloth and torpor. Yeah,
and
love it.
Completely why I'm not into, you know, doing a step program or, you know, getting up at midnight and taking this to get something done. I don't care about stars. But you know, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit. Yes, yes. Go ahead.
It's overcast in Pittsburgh. but you know, since and then all our other conversations after that have been more about survival, and when I'm not talking to you, that you know, just sloth and torpor has kind of been simmering.
Okay, now let me up here. So you do very physical work.
Yes.
And so I can only guess if you had one of these little apps on you, you would be getting a lot of steps every day just through the work that you do.
Yes, I do a lot of stairs in my work.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not working as much as I used to. But I do, it's like work keeps me going and flexible and active.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, okay. But then when you're not working.
How you do anything is, okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm not working.
Then is that when we sloth and torpor open their office doors?
Off and on.
Uh-huh.
That's how I do it. Yeah. Yeah,
so sometimes you're energetic and sometimes you're a couch person?
I can do that, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do the same thing, I do the same way. I kind of realized last week that, you know, I've been kind of simmering with, you know, sloth and torpor in my brain, but I don't think I have any idea. I just think it's some way to beat myself up.
Uh-huh. It's something that you get beaten up over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so can you give me a sentence or two on how the beating goes?
If somebody could see you.
Uh-huh. What would the neighbors think?
Successful people wouldn't do it. Don't do this.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I were a good person.
Good people don't behave the way you're behaving.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so are you, I hope, questioning whether or not there's any validity to that at all? In other words, no, there's no validity to the messages. No, absolutely not. But are you questioning whether you are not as active as you might be because
yeah.
you're being, because of self-hate.
Yeah, but it's also kind of like, oh, that milkshake looks really good. And then it's like, okay, you have the milkshake. Oh, I wouldn't have done that if I were you. Kind of, it's like the lure of, you know, just
yeah.
a courageous thing.
So the voice talks you into and then beats you up for.
Yeah. And guess what? I'm deceiving. They don't
and
look
what?
The same. They don't
and
look the same.
That's right. The voice doesn't sound the same when it's talking you into it as when it's beating you up for having done it.
Yeah.
But you,
a large part of it is not right now.
Oh, yes. In you mean procrastination?
Later. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And of course, later means never.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as a person falls for later, that means never. That just means
yeah.
a beating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's code for you're going to get a beating later. They just don't put the first part of that sentence in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And so it sounds like you've pretty much caught on to it.
Well, that's how I've gotten. I do the Tuesday night radio show, and it's at 8 o'clock, and that's kind of late for me. So I rest before the show.
Uh-huh.
And get started, you know, while I'll just read a magazine. I've got this habit of coming home and crashing so that I can get up and do the radio show.
Uh-huh.
And it
now,
started out as resting, but then it ended up with the internet is a big one.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it starts out with resting and ends up with unconsciousness.
Yeah.
And so here's the big question. Do you record and listen?
Yes.
Okay. And so does it occur to you that you could do that before the radio show?
No, it never has.
Okay, so you could make a note for yourself, and here's the big one for you and for anybody else who has ever fallen for this kind of trap. Okay, so you put up a note for yourself. It's Tuesday evening. You could even put it on your pillow probably, because that's where you're going to wind up with your magazine, right? Or on the computer screen or whatever it is. Okay. Put up a big note that says, record and listen before open air. And you'll read it, and what you'll hear in your head is, I don't want to. Or, it's alternative, that would be torpor, and then sloth would say, I don't feel like it. Okay? And when that happens, what you say is, I got you, you slimy little creep. Your ego. You are the voice of ego. You are the voice of self-hatred. And it's going to get really quiet around your house.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what will happen. And you will hear it say exactly what is so. The I, says, I don't want to. I don't want to do that. And because you'll be watching for it, you'll realize it's not you. And there's going to be a gap in there that's going to help you see very, very clearly that you're the one listening to it, ego identity, say what it says. Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And you really can set it up like that. And once you hear it like that, once you hear it that clearly, you can tell the difference. You'll recognize the voice. I don't want to. Well, I don't care what you want to do. You've been ruining my life for a lot of years. You go anywhere you want to go and do whatever you want to do. I'm going to choose my heart. I'm going to choose what takes care of me. And again, that shift is powerful. It takes us from being victimized by this stuff to get sending a clear message that I'm in charge.
The bottom line is there's a part of me that is burning for to wake up and end suffering, and has been since I was that way.
Yes.
And then there's another part that just wants the sugar.
That is not one of my feeding. That right, but here's the important part of that. That is not a part of. It's a parasite. It's the one who wants to wake up. Yes, that I would say that's your authentic nature. That's the deepest part of you, and you recognize it, you feel it, you know it. But that doesn't want to, that doesn't want you to take care of yourself, that doesn't want you to live in conscious, compassionate awareness. That's not a part of you. It's the devil.
Okay.
Say what?
It doesn't. Okay. The first question: how am I doing it? You asked on the phone call: how am I doing?
Uh huh.
I'm okay. And okay is not true. I'm actually doing quite well.
Yes, and it depends on who gets to answer the question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And again, you can.
Yeah.
You feel it. You see it. You know whether it's the good wolf or the bad wolf. You know by your body, by your heart, by everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so each time that it responds, you can just say, I saw that. I heard that. I know what you are. And you're disidentified.
I know what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not me.
And you're not me. Yep. Now, of course, expect it to kick up you-know-what. but that's okay. You can just watch it do that. You watch it do that instead of allowing yourself to fall into a belief that it's you and you're it, because it's not. All right, you have your assignment.
Thank you, Sharon.
And you're gonna let me know, aren't you?
Again and yet again.
All right, good. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Wow. What a great show.
It's a lot of fun. Thank you, Michael.
Great support. Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Good night.
Okay. Bye.